whole central focus of this channel is to give something that people can relate to, so they actually feel like they could do it too. People that are out here sharing all this advice and wisdom, but what have you done? It's hard for me to trust those guys. That's how I found my product, the Sleep Band, that I scaled to $2 million in sales and then actually sold that store. You just go and look at what's already working. The proof is there.
What's up, guys, and welcome back to First Things First. Very special guest today, Jordan Welch. Thank you for coming on. Nearly didn't happen.
Yes.
Nearly didn't happen, but we made it happen. You got a flight back home in a couple hours' time, so squeezed in. Thank you very much.
It's an honor to be here. Like I told you before, I've seen a ton of your episodes with some of my closest friends. I'm excited we're going to have a great conversation, and I had to make the time for you.
Yeah. Iman speaks very highly of you, so I was like, I've got to find out more about this guy.
That's my brother right there. We were just hanging out today, actually. We played FIFA. I beat him. So that felt good, you know?
It made me laugh because I was looking at your stories and there was a picture of you and him in the desert,
yeah,
holding umbrellas because it was raining.
Yeah.
Like, it literally never rains here in Dubai, and you pick the time to come when it actually rains.
Yeah, I'm from Florida, so, you know, I come to Dubai, I had to bring the traffic and the rain. But we literally had desert together, or we had dinner together in the desert at like 1 a.m. It was like midnight, 1 a.m, pouring down rain. And it was actually one of the most fun dinners I ever had in my entire life. There was no roof. We're just getting poured on, eating dinner. And it was honestly one of the most fun dinners I ever had in my life.
Nice, man. Has it been a successful trip?
Definitely. Mm. Probably the best trip I've had this year so far.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I know you've introduced yourself a number of times on podcasts about who you are and what you do. Mm. At this point now, how would you introduce yourself to someone who doesn't know who you are?
I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a man who's on his purpose, trying to become the best version of himself and documenting that entire journey with the rest of the world. And my mission, more than anything else, is to inspire the next generation. I want to make the content that I wish existed when I was younger and I was first getting started in my journey. I've also expanded a lot in the last year by bringing on the stories of people that I find interesting, because I understood that there's only so much that I know, but I have this amazing network of people that are so much more smarter than me. So let me bring them on and share their story. So really, I'm an entrepreneur and I'm out here on YouTube sharing my story and the stories of other people that I find interesting with the mission to inspire the world, you know?
How long have you been doing YouTube for?
I think I posted my first YouTube video when I was like 12 years old.
12?
Yeah.
That's pretty mad. Like, how did that come about?
Well, I always wanted to become a YouTuber when I was young because I didn't really watch a lot of TV. The second I got internet connection and I found out about YouTube, I just became obsessed with YouTubers. So my mom actually had this like crappy Canon PowerShot camera, and I would steal it from her and I would make videos myself. And then I would go on my computer and I actually pirated a editing software and I just started putting together little projects.
What was it?
I used to use Sony Vegas in the beginning. Okay. So I would watch tutorials, how to edit, how to make myself fly or like get hit by a car, or like shoot fire out of my hands and stuff. I just had a love for it. I just thought it was really fun. Nobody else knew about it except for my neighbor and my mom. And I just put videos out all the time. We did skits. We did basketball videos. We did skateboarding videos. Pretty much any idea that I had back then, I just went out there and created it.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said that to a lot of people who are thinking about doing YouTube. You just got to just start posting stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, people see my channel now and how it's going, but a lot of people don't realize that I've been running this channel now for well over 10 years. Mm. Now, of course, the name has changed and I've bounced around through different industries, but I've put a lot of reps in.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
What? So what you were doing the YouTube videos at a very early age, what else were you doing? You had a few entrepreneurial, I don't know, adventures.
Yeah.
Doing buying and selling a couple of things.
Yeah. So in the eighth grade, I made a promise to myself and I said, I will never work a job. Mm-hmm. I was living with my mom and I saw how hard that she struggled in her job just to make less than $20,000 a year. And that bothered me. That did something to me. And I realized for myself, that wasn't what I wanted to do. And when I started to see kids on the internet making money online when I was young and I was in middle school, I said, I want to be just like them. Mm. I don't want to do what she did. I love my mom. I have more respect for her than anybody on this planet, but I don't want to do what she did. So I made a promise to myself in the eighth grade that I would never work a job. So all throughout eighth grade and high school, I was trying different business models. I tried to start a clothing brand, which did okay, but I didn't get rich off of it. Mm. I took the money from the clothing brand to try to start reselling shoes. Again, I made a little bit of money. I actually made my first $1,000 from doing this, but I wasn't making more than my friends who had jobs at the grocery store, or the fast food restaurant, but I was continuously trying new things. I took the money from buying shoes to rent out the convention center in my city and hosted a sneaker trading convention for people to come and buy, sell, and trade. And that day was the day that I knew I was going to be an entrepreneur forever.
Mm-hmm. How many people came to that convention?
It had to have, I don't know the exact number, but it had to have been over 100. I think it was like 150 people there. And you got to understand, I'm like a little 16-year-old kid.
Yeah, that takes a lot of organization.
Yeah, I was a little stressed out 16-year-old that day for sure. But when I pulled up in the morning, there was a line of people waiting to get inside of this convention center. And I was like, this is crazy. The news was there. The local news was there. I did an interview with the local news channel as a kid, bro. And then I got into the event and I thought I was lit. I thought this was like the best day of my life. People were running around. Everybody was like, congrats, man. They saw all the work I had been putting in. The event comes to a close and we had a lot of cash because we were selling tickets in cash. And I just had this big old stack of cash. I was like, this is it. Like, I'm going to just be an event guy forever. I figured it out. But man, when we got back home, I started counting my cash. I had to put aside money for the venue. I had to put aside money for the DJ. I had to pay off my partner that I was working with at the time. And when I started looking at the money, I had no more money left. Yeah. I had a stack of cash. And then when I started breaking everything up, bro, I think I had like $100 in the end. And that was devastating to me. That was my first great failure in my journey. I remember that day I sat on the couch and I just cried, me and my mom. And she was like, no, it's okay. Like, you did it. Like, it's okay. Like, don't be mad. Like, you did something amazing. But all I could think about was like, I just lost all my money, you know?
Why did you think it was a failure though? Because it wasn't, you didn't necessarily lose money. Like, you didn't necessarily make money, but you kind of...
Yeah, I didn't understand business and economics in the level that I do now. So all I understood is that before I did this event, I had about $1,000. And after I did this event, I had about $100. So
to I suppose when you're there and you see the cash and you feel it, and then you just have to say goodbye to it.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks. So after that, bro, I honestly like took a little bit of a break from entrepreneurship. I didn't end up getting a job right away, but I just did the high school thing, enjoyed my time there. And I found another love again for the videos. Mm-hmm. I started making a little bit of money doing music videos. I had people in my city pointing guns at me and shit while I'm filming a video just to make a couple bucks. I did a wedding video. Oh my God, that was the worst job I ever did in my life. But I just always been trying stuff, bro. I think the worst thing I ever did was I was doing tech support on Craigslist.
Oh, yeah.
I had a listing on there that said, I'll fix anything anywhere. And people would just have me come to their house and just fix stuff. But I was like 17, so I was low-key scared I was going to get like kidnapped or something.
What was one of those jobs that you did that you felt like you learned the most from, like a skill set?
Honestly, selling the shoes taught me a lot because it taught me the fact that I don't have to sell my own stuff to make money. Mm-hmm. I understood that as long as I could buy something, add some value to it, make it look nicer, I could make a little bit of a profit. And that was really the first time where it clicked in my brain that I don't have to make something. With the clothing brand, I had to make a product. I had to put my logo on it. I had to find blanks. But with this, I could just buy it, improve them, clean them up, take better pictures, and I could flip it. So that was a big shift. And also the videos. Mm-hmm. Honestly, bro, the skill of learning how to tell stories and edit videos is the thing that made me the most money in my life.
Did you just figure that out, or do you actually go and actively learn how to storytell?
It's a reps thing. You know, I think it's just a matter of making as many videos as you can and also learning about it. I would just watch other YouTubers. I would watch movies. I'll watch TV shows and just try to be conscious of like, okay, this is the storyline. This is the climax. This is the villain. This is the protagonist. I just love the art of storytelling. Mm-hmm. I think that's like one of my most favorite things in the world. And that's the thing I feel like that has made me the most money.
You know, with the shoe thing, how did you even begin to decide where you're going to get the shoes from in the first place?
Well, there's like this crazy subculture back in the day on Facebook of people that used to resell shoes. So one thing that I've always done in my journey is I find whoever's doing the thing that I want to do and I figure out how I can get in touch with them and learn from them. So I found somebody that was in my city that was making like a couple $100 a week selling shoes. So I just bothered him all the time until he got back to me. And I was like, what do you look for? What type of shoes do you buy? What's the best first shoe to buy? And for me, that was what shortcut my learning curve. Mm-hmm. When I started doing e-commerce down the line, I found somebody that was making $500 a day and I just blew him up until I can get in touch with him. Even now, bro, my channel with 1 million subscribers, I'm bothering my friends that have 10 million subscribers to roast my thumbnails and titles and hooks. Like, so I've always been trying to find whoever's a little bit ahead of me and learning from them. So I saw other people doing it, and I felt like I could do the same.
Who are you closest with that's got the most subscribers?
Me and Iman are super close. Yeah. I know a lot of other YouTubers as well, like Ryan Trahan, Airac. There's another guy that I really like named Phidias. He's like somebody that's been hugely helpful in my journey. I know a lot of YouTubers, some of them big, some of them small, but I talk to those guys probably the most, more than anybody.
You know what's mad now? I think just the competition out there, not only is there's more content creators, but the levels of the quality when it comes to thumbnails is crazy. Like when I started my channel, I was just taking screenshots of the actual video and just being like, hoping for the best.
Yeah, it's true. The levels have gone up a lot, but I feel like YouTube is actually coming around full circle. Like the biggest YouTubers that I see, like some of them, like iShowSpeed or like Kai Cenat, they do the same thing. They just screenshot moments of their video. Yeah. I think YouTube is making a shift to now focusing on who can build the biggest community and the most passionate audience, as opposed to like who can just make the most fast-paced, clickbaity, rapid-fire videos, you know? Who can actually build an audience of people who want to show up every time they post?
Yeah, how would you define a strong YouTube community? Just the people that are commenting or just having consistent viewers per video?
I think it's a matter of having a mission that people can get behind. Mm. So I think if you have something that you represent through your story that people can relate to, they're going to follow along and watch whatever you want to watch. Like it could be a really positive thing or it can be on the other side. Like for example, like Full Send. Mm. They are getting the audience of people who want to party because their mission and their brand relates to those people. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think for people like even like Hamza you had on your show, he has like the whole Jeffrey versus Adonis. Like people want to be like Adonis. Mm. So they want to watch this guy so they get along with that movement. That's sort of how I like to look at it. It's like who has a movement or a mission that people can relate to and they're going to follow along. But I'm still learning this myself.
I think the difficult thing with me is because I've been around for a while now. Like, I've been putting videos up 7 years, nearly eight. Mm-hmm. And over time, I think your mission changes a little bit. Mm-hmm. As you evolve, so does the channel in a sense. And I think I got to a point where I was like literally lost. I was like, what is it that I even do now? Because when I first started, it was all about the fitness stuff, like just purely helping people build muscle, lose body fat. And then it kind of transitioned into like doing like travel videos for a bit, but still like an element of fitness. Then like the vlogs. And I think now if I look at like the past few videos I've done this year, it's been very sort of vlog focused and entertainment focused. And I kind of moved away from doing the education stuff, but I want to come back around to doing that more, I think.
I think for you, like as somebody who watches your videos, I think people connect with the fact that you are somebody who's on their purpose. Like you're a healthy guy, you make money, you have a good lifestyle. Like people want to live like you. Mm-hmm. So they're going to watch your every move so they can try to get to that level.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel you, bro. Because even for me, like when I first started blowing up on YouTube, I was just documenting my journey of dropshipping and building my store. And I wanted to sort of reinvent that space on YouTube. That was the mission of my channel. I was like, I'm on a mission to document my journey of building my dropshipping store with as much transparency as possible. I used to say that in every single video. But now if I said that in the beginning of the video, it don't make no sense, right? Yeah. What I say now is just that it's another day, another W, like another chance to get the most out of the day. And more than anything, I'm just trying to inspire the world with my channel. Like that's sort of the statement that I'm on right now. But I feel you because it happens. Like when you level up in your life or you change your path, that's got to follow up with YouTube. Mm. A lot of people burn out because they, like if I was still doing the same dropshipping videos I was making from 2016, I would probably hate YouTube right now. But because we're constantly trying to push the bar, I think it stays fun for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I always underestimated how much time you need to put aside to actually thinking about the ideas for the videos. Mm-hmm. Because especially recently, I've just been, I would pick up the camera and just go out with Chris and just hope for the best. But still gets views because I think people are just interested in what I'm up to. But I feel like if I put more planning and strategy into it, the views would double or triple.
100%. But that goes with anything in life, right?
Yeah.
Like the more effort, the more reward. Like I always see a direct correlation between the effort I put into a video towards the views that it gets.
Mm. Has it ever been the case where you have put loads of effort into it and it's just flop?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Especially when I was first starting. Mm. But now I feel like we don't hit on every video, but I feel like I know the ones that are going to hit the hardest and they usually do. Mm. But sometimes we drop a video, I think it's my favorite one, and then it goes 10 out of 10, which is like our worst performer. And nothing hurts more than that, man.
It's
That's
really,
a bad feeling,
bro. It sucks. Especially you put so much time into it.
it's part of the game, though. You know, it's all good. Even we had a video actually recently that did that, and it was one of those ones that I thought was going to do good. But those type of experience are good for me because it shows me that, hey, you need to keep sharpening your blade. You need to keep getting better. There's never a moment where you just can just copy what worked in the past and just keep repeating that. Mm. You know.
So tell me about drop shipping, because I don't really know anything about it, to be honest. Like, if you are going to explain it to an absolute beginner, how would you summarize it?
I would basically say that we're finding the products that's already selling out there on social media, and we're selling them for ourselves.
But so selling on social media or selling anywhere?
So
like, is it already selling on websites?
So my strategy and the way I made all my money with dropshipping is simple, right? I look for the products that's already making money on Facebook specifically or Instagram. I try to
How do you know if it's making money?
Oh, just look at the engagement, right? If it's got a ton of likes, if it's got a ton of comments.
Also, like if you see like an ad.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if something's going viral and people are in the comments tagging their friends saying, I want this, I need this, I want to buy it, that means that there's interest in it, right? Mm. What we do then is we try to find a supplier that can handle that product. Now, nowadays, you don't have to use the old methods of 2 month, 3 month shipping times. There's a bunch of suppliers out in China that can send products around the world in just under like 2 weeks, sometimes 10 days. Mm-hmm. So we find those suppliers and we build a store and we launch ads for ourselves and see how those products do. It's sort of like testing the products until you find the one that works. Mm-hmm. And then you could double down and build a brand off of that product. That's really what I did. That's how I found my product, the Sleep Band, that I scaled to $2 million in sales. And then I actually sold that store last year.
A couple mil in sales.
Yeah. Off of a product that I found on a Facebook ad, literally just scrolling, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't try to reinvent the wheel and find something brand new. I look for what's already working and I give it a try for myself. Now, to be able to do that, you have to build your skills. You have to know how to make websites. You have to know how to edit videos. You have to have a little bit of an understanding of copywriting. But the best part about finding what's already working is that you can sort of just model your approach off of what's already working for them. Mm. That's been better for me than any marketing book or copywriting video or any type of sales training. You just go and look at what's already working. The proof is there, you know?
So a lot, pretty much all of the traffic is coming from the paid ads.
Yes.
So in a sense, anybody could do it.
Yes, for sure. I think there's a lot of methods now to build your store. There's like free methods like organic TikTok. But I like doing paid ads because I have control over it, right? If I post organic videos, the algorithm is sort of fully in control. Yeah, I can control how good I make the video and stuff. But when I have paid ads, I could really refine who's going to see that video, what that video looks like, and exactly how much impressions and traffic I want to push towards that. Mm-hmm. So Facebook ads changed my life, honestly. Facebook ads is what made my first $1 million. Learning that skill set is what got me on my feet financially.
Do you think most entrepreneurs should learn the basics of it?
100%.
Because I've paid people to do it, but it annoys me because I still don't fully understand how it works. And I don't know if they're doing a good job, like a really good job, or if they're just having my life.
Yeah, it depends on what business you're in, right? But for me, ads have been able to not only grow my e-commerce business, but also my software business. And even my parents, they have a barbecue food truck and ads have been able to help build their business. So I honestly feel like it's one of the highest value skills. Like, how much you pay this company to run your ads for you?
Real quick, guys, I just want to share with you something which I spent the end of 2023 putting together for you. You see, in life, if you are unhappy with something, you need to change it. That is one of the core philosophies that has driven me, my businesses, and my fitness over the past 10 years. In recent years, I've been asked frequently how I've managed to go from being an average personal trainer, working all day, every day in a gym in the north of England, to the position that I am in today. That is why I decided to create the Digital Playbook. This is a step-by-step blueprint for anybody who finds themselves in the same position that I did years ago, wondering to myself, how can I make money online? Can I really make a full-time income from creating content about the things that I actually like? How can I travel the world, work from my laptop, and at the same time still afford to live a great lifestyle? It's essentially a playbook on how I built multi-million pound businesses off the back of creating content online. If you want to check it out, head over to thedigitalplaybook.net and you can book in a call with my team to find out more. Let's get back to the episode. When I was working with one of them, they were charging a flat monthly fee of 4,000.
Yeah, exactly. So even if you could just master this skill set and offer it to other businesses in your city, like restaurants or barbers or dentists, you can make a ton of money. So for me, I feel like learning how to run paid ads is one of the best skills you can acquire.
So I'm trying to figure out how you did this. Not that I want to get into it, but just because I want to understand how it works. So you're like, how do you even get the idea that this is something you wanted to do?
Dropshipping.
Yeah.
So in 2017, I had no money. Mm-hmm. I was this business kid, like I told you, in high school. But by the end of high school, with no money. All my friends that used to work at McDonald's had more money than me. Mm. So I had to go to college. My mom supported me all the way. But she was like, listen, you can't just live here after graduating high school with no money. You have to go out and do something. So all my friends around me were going to college. I felt that pressure. And I ended up going to the only college that accepted me. It was like a local school close by. That first year of school, honestly, it was not the best period of my life. I really wanted to just get back into the roots of building a business, but I was so focused on class that I couldn't. So I made a promise to myself and I said, once this year of school is over, I'm going to use this summer break to build the business that allows me to drop out. People always ask me, they're like, what were you studying when you were in college? I was like, I was studying how to drop out. So once I got in my first summer, I just spent every single day, I would stay up as late as possible and just worked and worked and worked on building this business. I saw people on YouTube that were doing it, and I felt like if these guys could do it, there's no way that I can't figure this out too. I already knew a little bit about editing videos. I knew a little bit about making websites. I just had to find a product. So that's when I got down that process of learning Facebook ads and starting to test a couple of different products. And by the end of that first 3 months, I had found my first profitable product, and I was making enough money at that point to say, okay, I'm not going to keep doing school.
Was that first product the sleep thing, or was it something else?
No. So see, when I first started back in 2017, I was selling everything and anything. So I didn't really understand the game like I understood it now. So any product that I could find that was making money, I would sell it. Like I sold some musical instrument, like this ocarina thing from Legend of Zelda. I sold bracelets. I sold a knife sharpener. I sold like sandblasting tools. I sold lunch boxes. Any product, this is what I said, any product that I saw going viral on the internet, I would just try it out of my store. And the mistake that I made back then was I would launch these products, they would make some money, and then they would die off just a couple months later. Mm. And that's inevitably what happened. Even though I had made over $1 million in sales from this business, it wasn't sustainable. It didn't last for the long term. And going into 2018, like I had stacked up a little bit of money, but the business was sort of on like a downward trajectory. You know?
This is just because the popularity of the products just fluctuate. Like all of a sudden, they're just not.
No, it's just because I never doubled down on any of these products, right? I kept them on what's called a general store. So a general store is where you basically have all different types of products. Think of like a Walmart, right? Mm. And when I had a product that was working, instead of turning around and building a brand out of it, I just kept it on that store. You know what I'm saying?
You could have made a completely separate website selling that product and then maybe other products relating to that product.
Exactly. And that's what I did with the sleep band. And that's what allowed me to make a couple $1 million in sales. That was the big shift that I had. So I made a little bit of money from that first store, but I lost it all. And then I used...
How'd you lose it? Just the overheads?
Yeah. So that's a story in and of itself. So in 2018, I left my hometown. I had stacked up a little bit of money, and I always wanted to move to LA. So I moved to Los Angeles in 2018, and I just started kind of neglecting the things that got me there. I started spending more. I stopped working on the dropshipping store as much. I doubled down on YouTube and kind of like the whole coaching course business, and I just started living that LA life. And, you know, 2 years later, it sort of caught up to me, and I ran out of all the money that I had in my savings, and my e-commerce store was completely down bad. There was no more store at all. And
you say that was because you maybe didn't understand like money as much as you could have done, like being financially literate.
I think it's just being a young kid from not having any money, getting his first taste of it, getting a little bit more of an ego and just trying to like fulfill that. Maybe a young, insecure kid even at that. And
how old were you at that point?
21.
Yeah.
20, 21, you know, just starting to make a little bit of money. And
I think the best of us go through that phase.
100%, because that really was the phase that turned me into the man that I am today. Because in July of 2020, I had to move back to my mom's house. And when I moved back, I had $30,000 in credit card debt.
So
it was like that. And all that I had left in cash was like $1,000, a little bit less than $1,000. And I said, okay, let me get back to my roots. Let me try dropshipping one last time. I tried to start a software company. I tried to start a coaching business. I tried to host events. I was doing everything in LA except for the thing that got me there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I always see the grass as greener in these other businesses. But I said, okay, let me do this. And literally, bro, within the first month of starting that store, I got it to over $10,000 in profit. And
This was the sleep thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I documented this whole thing on YouTube. I actually started documenting again when I was at this lowest moment. Because I was like, I need all this on footage. Mm-hmm. And I want to show myself what it's like to rise from this moment. Yeah. And that really was the turning point in my life. And there's been many ups and downs since then. But my trajectory has been nice since that year, 2020.
So when you started that... The product that actually worked.
Yeah.
Did you just literally focus on selling that, or was there anything else you sold?
So I tried two different products before that were making money, but they weren't really crushing like this one was. I was selling like little home decor items. But this product in particular, the first day that I launched it, it started making a couple $100 a day in sales. And the thing that I liked about this product was that it was something that I actually was going to use. I was sleeping in the room with my little brother and he snores like crazy. So I said, okay, I need this thing. I need to block out. It's basically like a product that blocks out noise with like sleep sounds or a podcast or audiobooks.
Like an eye mask as well at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. So it blocks out light, out sound. And I was like, this is perfect for me. That's the difference, really. Instead of selling random junk, we try to find products that people actually want to use, products that actually add value to people's lives. So that product for me was a huge turning point, you know?
So was it pretty easy getting it made?
Well, I started dropshipping it first.
So, yeah, but when you were like, okay, so this is working, so I want to have my own product. Did you get it made like in China or something?
So I started with dropshipping with the version that they already had in China. But once I started making money with the product, I fixed all the mistakes that I had made in the past. I doubled down on the product. I improved everything that I could. So the fabric of the product, the quality of the speakers, the packaging. I did that just by communicating with the manufacturers and just making it to the exact specifications that I wanted. This is not a fast process. It took me months.
How did you communicate with them? Like, did you find someone that spoke English?
Yeah, I had an agent.
Okay.
So we're getting into like the real technical stuff of dropshipping. But
I'm really curious about this because it sounds easy. And like when people see the concept of it, it's like, oh, okay, just find a product that's like selling and then, yeah, just try and sell it.
Yeah, no, I never tell anybody that it's easy. You know, it's a challenge. The biggest challenge is learning the skills themselves. The concept is actually quite simple. You find what's working and you sell it. But to develop the skill set to compete, it takes time. But yeah, I had an agent. So an agent is somebody that works with the manufacturers in China. They find you better shipping options. They find you better quality options. They won't take you seriously, though, until you're actually making money.
Yeah.
So when you start, you got to just start dropshipping with what's out there. But once you start getting sales, you could talk with these people and you can customize the product.
So you had to basically prove like, hey, look, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Help me out. And what cut would they take?
No, they don't take a cut.
They're not. What do they get paid?
Well, they take, I guess when I hear a cut, I'm always thinking like a bigger percentage, but they take like a little bit off of each order, but they make money when you buy in bulk. So yes, I guess they do take a cut. Yeah. But when I think cut, I'm thinking like a percentage of my business or something.
No.
Yeah, they just work off of like, you know, getting a percentage of the quantity of the products.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So that was clearly doing very well, making serious dough off it.
Yeah, by the end of the year, the business was over $100,000 a month in sales and I was out of debt. I paid off all my loans. I moved to Miami. I had an apartment again and I was back on my feet. I used to smoke weed back then. I quit smoking. I didn't party as much as I used to, barely at all. I was focused, bro. I was locked in, you know? This was 2020, the end of the year.
So what happened with that company?
I ran it. The next year, we did over $1.5 million in sales. And I documented the whole thing on YouTube. So as a result, my YouTube channel grew a lot as well. In that year of 2021, my YouTube channel grew over 300,000 subscribers. So this business started to kick off. My channel started to grow. And I had an education business at that time that sort of fell off. When I lost all my money in LA, and nobody want to learn from that kid no more. But when I started documenting my journey and showing people, yo, every single video, I'll start the video and show my phone and be like, this is what we made today. Because nobody else was doing that with dropshipping. It was just like talking about theory. So people really got behind this idea of me documenting the journey and the education business started booming. By the end of the year in 2021, not only was my dropshipping store doing a couple hundred thousand a month in sales, my education business was right around that as well, mm-hmm. and my AdSense on my channel. So, you know, I went from in 1 year being in debt, $30,000, to by the end of 2021, making a couple hundred thousand dollars a month.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Damn. I think that's what people need to see. They need to see the proof that, like, look, this is actually working. I am making the money here. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, there's so many people, especially now, all these fake gurus who are pretending to be successful, yet they don't have any proof to show that they themselves are successful or mm-hmm. what they're educating people about is actually helping them as well at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest problem in the internet money YouTube space is people that are out here sharing all this advice and wisdom, but what have you done?
Yeah.
Like, what is your track record? Can you show me any of your businesses that you actually built? So even people that can show revenue and numbers but can't talk about the business that they built, it's hard for me to trust those guys.
Well, it's like all the crypto people, isn't it? They got lucky. And then they're trying to teach people crypto, but they don't really know what to talk about.
Yeah, I don't knock it, but I respect people that can show a track record of what they built. And I think that's why people got behind my movement as well, because I was documenting the whole entire thing. Mm-hmm. And I still do to this day. I share my failures. I share my wins. I even made a video recently about my addiction to weed. Like I'm very open with my audience. You know, I don't put on this image that I'm like Mr. Perfect, you know, and I think people appreciate that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Talk to me about weed smoking, because like how did you get addicted to it?
Well, growing up, it was very like normal thing in my house. Like my mom smoked, my dad smoked.
Really?
Like, it wasn't nothing that was weird. Like I smelled it every day. Like I just got used to it, but I never wanted to do it. As a kid, I actually thought it was gross. Like the smell of it kind of bothered me. So I just had no interest. But when I was in high school, I made like, again, as I said, I was a business guy. I made a promise to myself like, yo, I'm going to be clean. Like I'm not going to drink nothing. I'm not going to smoke nothing. So in high school, I literally did nothing. Until the last year of school, I had been in a relationship, my first relationship, and I broke up with the girl and I was really sad. It was like my first little heartbreak.
Oh, yeah.
And I was hanging out with my boy and he's like, yo, like, come on, let's try it. And I was like, all right, whatever. So I ended up smoking that day when I was like 18, 17. And that was when it kind of all started. Like I sort of told myself, oh, I'll never actually buy it myself. I'm just going to have it if my friends have it. But then, you know, you start hanging around those friends more purposefully. And then before you know it, you're buying it, you're rolling it, you're doing it. And when I started making money in 2017 and I got my own apartment with my friends, they all smoked. So then it just became
no escape.
Wake and bake, you know, stay up late and just do it every night. My normal state of mind from 19 to 22 was high. I was not even in a sober state of mind for 90% of my life, you know?
I don't know how people do it, because obviously I've tried it quite a few times, but I don't even need a lot. Like my tolerance is so low. I'll have a few puffs and I will literally be in space. Like I am flying. I can't do anything. Like I literally cannot do anything. Anything remotely productive, it's not happening. Anything that requires me to think or critically think, that's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it comes to, I've never tried to work out high. I don't think that would go down very well. But even when it comes to my diet as well, I just cannot stop eating.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that I think a lot of people that are addicted to it are delusional, because like they think that they're being more productive on it.
Well, super creative.
They're being more creative, or their workouts are even better. But man, like when you get past that hurdle of quitting, because it is hard at first to quit, you unlock a new level. That's what I found in my life. So, you know, some of my friends that do it are successful, but my most successful friends, the real big dogs, they don't do it.
I think it's something in the genetics, because I feel like some people can function and operate at a high level whilst being high. It's like those people who drink a lot of alcohol. They can wake up the next day and they're completely fine and they just get on with their day, whereas other people like myself, absolutely destroyed, like can again barely do anything. So I think part of course you probably build up a tolerance and get used to it, but I think some people genuinely just handle it better than others.
I had an extreme tolerance to it. Like I would smoke like full-size joints, like 3-4 of them a day. But you know, again, I think there was some delusion in there, because I would think that I'm totally fine and I'm being my most productive, but when I was stopped, I realized that like, wait, I'm not an anxious person. Like I thought I was just naturally like a more anxious, like kind of paranoid guy. But when I stopped, I got more calm. I thought I was being productive, but when I stopped, I started making 10 times more money and getting way more done. So I think everybody that does it, honestly, should at least try and see what they're actually like without it. And you'd probably be surprised.
How you said it was difficult to stop.
Yeah.
How did, what point were you like, nah, this literally just needs to stop now?
Yeah, the day that I moved back to my mom's house, man, I made a promise that I was going to give it up because I was like...
But she's there smoking weed, though, still.
Yeah, it didn't make it easy, you know. But I let her do that, and it didn't bother me because I had such a deep desire to get back on my feet that I knew I needed to sacrifice those things at that time. So when I moved back in 2020, I gave it up, and I actually stopped for like over 6 months at that time, and those 6 months were where I bounced back. But once I started making money again, I was like, okay, well, now I earned it, so let me give it a try again. Mm. And, bro, the cycle repeated itself. Again, I got back on the habit of addiction. I was doing good this time, though. So I was making money and everything was fine. But I understood that eventually you have to stop this. Like, you can't reach your highest potential if you keep doing this. Yeah, your videos are going viral. Yeah, you're making money. But deep down, at the end of the night when you're doing this, in your mind, you're telling yourself you don't want to be doing it. So you have to stop. But I was addicted to it, bro. I really would smoke every single day, every single night. And I actually decided to quit again last year in August. And since last August, I haven't touched it once. It's been over a year now. And that was just me reaching my breaking point. I just started to feel just like, you know, when you make a promise to yourself and then you break that promise, your mind is like, it's an agreement. You failed to keep your own word. There's no worse feeling than that. You know, so for me, I continuously was doing that with the weed, and I decided one day it's time to go.
Yeah. So usually if you break one promise, then after that, you end up breaking another promise and another promise, and then it just spirals, and then you're just a complete failure almost.
The most important thing is keeping your word to yourself, you know? I find my most peace and fulfillment when I say I'm going to do something. I make a promise to myself that we're going to shoot this video this week and I get it done, or I'm going to wake up tomorrow in the morning and I get it done. So for me, that was that, and now I'm done with it. I don't even have the desire for it anymore like I used to.
Have you got any of your close friends in the States that smoke?
Yeah, some of them. But like I said, my real friends that are my most successful ones, the ones that I really respect the most, they don't.
Yeah. My biggest hurdle was moving away from drinking alcohol. Mm-hmm. And obviously alcohol is a very common thing, especially in the UK. Everybody drinks. Mm-hmm. Even out here in Dubai, like everybody is going out and partying and drinking. And I did a challenge where I decided, right, okay, I'm going to be sober for 6 months. And that was probably one of the best things I did because it puts you in situations where you're usually used to drinking. Like if you're going out to a bar or a club, you will drink. That's like the normal thing to do. So I was still going out and socializing, but I wasn't allowed to drink. So it was forcing me to be in these uncomfortable situations sober. And two things happened. Either I decided, actually, I don't like being in these situations anymore, or like, oh, I can actually manage to be in this situation sober because I'm now more confident and don't feel as though I'm like relying upon something. Mm-hmm. It's like a habit. If you go out and you drink, it's like a normal thing to do. But the moment it doesn't become a habit, then it's like, now when I go out, it's normal for me to not drink.
That's
and
impressive.
I prefer that.
That's impressive. And it means that you have more control. Mm. A lot of people, they just let go in that environment.
Yeah.
But sometimes it could even be more fun, bro. Because you get to people watch it, you get to see people that are all messed up. And it feels good to leave the club and be like, okay, I got it, you know? I got it under wraps.
For me as well, like if you can go out, like now I will go out and I mingle for a little bit.
Yeah.
But usually when it comes to like 11 or 12, I'm like, okay, cool, see ya. Or I'll just like disappear away from the situation without telling anyone.
Yes.
Then I wake up the next day and I feel amazing, go to the gym and have a productive day.
Respect, bro.
Yeah, man.
I still get on with a little party every once in a while, though.
Oh, you know? So do I. Yeah, I'm. You were saying before you've been doing a bit of DJing.
Yeah, definitely. It's my new hobby.
Yeah.
I always loved house music. I always loved electronic music, like since I was a kid. And I always thought the DJs were like the coolest people in the world. So I got
it's a pretty cool job.
It's a cool ass job for sure.
I don't know if I could do it though. Like the constant travel and the lifestyle and the. I mean, you are really surrounded by people who are on everything.
Yeah.
So for those people, I think there's a couple of DJs now. I think like David Guetta is like sober now and a few others. Like they just, and Solomon, I think. I don't think he touches anything.
Yeah, a lot of the OG guys are, because they're traveling so crazy and they live that lifestyle. That's the only way to sustain it. Mm. I don't see myself doing it as a full-time thing, but it's what I do at the end of the day when I'm done with my work. I go upstairs. I look for new music. I play music. For me, I'm always been a super creative guy. Anything related to arts and music and creativity is what calls to me most, even more than the business stuff. I love business, but I've always been into video production. I used to play instrument. I used to love telling stories, and anything on the creative side is what I like. And the DJing thing has been that new outlet for me. So I actually played my first little set here in Dubai. It wasn't anything crazy, but it was really fun. I had a lot of fun.
Did you say it was a Bagatelle?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice, man.
Yeah, it was cool. There wasn't a lot of people there or nothing, but it was like me, my friends.
Yeah, and you cleared the place out.
Yeah, I know. They all music. Left. I came up and it was like, who is this guy throwing tomatoes and stuff? Nah, it was a good time.
Who's your top three DJs?
Well, of all time, I really respect John Summit. I think he's going crazy right now, playing some really cool stuff. I like these guys, Kiani Music.
Oh, yeah. They're coming here in 2 weeks.
That's cool. They're really fire. I'm going to go see them at the end of the year. And, you know, this is an interesting guy, Skepta. He's a rapper.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what?
As a DJ, he's insane, needs
to come,
bro.
He's like the top person on my hit list who I want to come on the podcast.
Yeah, he impressed me so much with his DJ set. I was blown away. And this guy, Moshak. Those are my favorite ones, like, right now. I really like all four.
Skepta's had a mad career because he did, like, when I was growing up, I was into grime. Uh-huh. So he was doing the grime thing.
Of course.
And then it kind of... He was doing a bit of grime and then went, I guess, into like UK rap. Uh-huh. And then he like blew up in America, did like the collab with Drake. And then he's now doing the house music thing.
He's good too, bro.
And he's doing like, he's managed to break away and like be this guy who has just smashed it in so many different areas. Like he's got the fashion thing on lock, like everything.
Like, yeah, I respect people like that. Like, honestly, I look at, like, you know, these big billionaire business guys, and like, I think they're all super cool. But the people that I honestly respect and look up to the most are, like, these hyper creatives like Kanye West, Virgil Abloh, Pharrell Williams. These people that have been able to go in all these different arenas and just crush it creatively. I love that stuff. I honestly don't even care to, like, be a billionaire when it's all said and done. Like, I just want to make a lot of cool stuff that makes people feel something. Mm. And that will be my legacy. I don't care about nothing else. I want to make money. I want to get rich, but I just like making cool stuff, you know? Yeah.
And I guess you need to get that money coming in to give you the freedom to be able to do what it is that like you really want to do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we make money and we're going to keep making money, and I hope to make more and more and more over the years, but that's not the number one driving factor for me in this world.
You know? I've realized that with me as well.
Yeah.
Like if I truly was motivated by money, then like I'd probably be up here at this point, but that's not the thing that drives me. It's crazy when you're speaking to these millionaires, because you're doing a lot of these videos where you're interviewing them. Mm-hmm. Do you find that that is the thing that they are motivated by? Like they're obsessed with making the money or something else?
I really don't think the richest people in the world are obsessed with making money. I think what they're obsessed with is creating stuff that fixes massive problems for people at scale, or creating things that add value to the world. Because if you focus on making money, it's like, it's the wrong way to look at it. I really think a lot of beginners make this mistake too. They're like trying to figure out what's the best way to make $10,000 a month, but then they look at themselves and they don't have anything that's valuable to the world to provide. They have no skill set. They have no product or service that they can sell, but all they're trying to do is figure out how to make money. Mm. I don't think that's the right way to look at it. And the richest people I've ever met, they don't look at it. They try to say, what is a problem in the world that I could solve, and let me solve it. Like, I had a meeting here in Dubai with a billionaire just last week, and he was telling me this word for word. He's like, I don't focus so much on making money. He's like, I focus on solving problems in the world. And that's how I made all my money.
I guess, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Who was the most intriguing millionaire that you interviewed?
I met the richest man in Florida.
Was that the $300 billion Dollar Man video.
Yes, he at 80 years old has made tens of billions of dollars and runs a company that has over $300 billion in management. And the reason why he was interesting to me is because he was not the way that I expected a billionaire to be. Mm-hmm. He was kind, he was respectful, he welcomed us into his house, and he treated me like an equal. And I always had this kind of perspective of what a billionaire person might be like, a little bit more like serious, like rugged, but he was super cool. And his story was crazy. To come from nothing and get to that level was truly amazing. I would say him and also Iman. Iman's story is just different.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, he's a different gravy, man.
But the billionaire, Thomas Peterffy, got to be the most intriguing person I sat down with this year. Yeah.
Do you think you still continue to make those types of videos?
The interviews?
Yeah.
100%. Because for me, it's an amazing opportunity to go sit with somebody that I can learn from, and I get to share that whole experience with my audience. And I think that those videos in the end will have some of the biggest impact. Because what I learned is that the thing that motivates people is not to flash. Like, you could see me and I can go buy all these watches and car and travel and stuff, and you're gonna think that's cool, but that's not what's gonna motivate you to get up. What motivates you is the fact that I was just broke 2 years ago and now I'm doing it. What motivates you is the story. So that's why I'm so big on finding people with interesting stories and sharing those with the world. I think for me, this is a lane that I wanna continue to go on for a long time. I don't see myself stopping with it anytime soon.
How do you find those people?
Well,
just research.
I have a good network of friends that I also include on my channel. But yeah, we do a lot of research. I have a team and we find people and we reach out to them. But if I look at all the ones that I've done on my channel this year, 90% of them were people that I already knew or like a friend of a friend. So that helps.
Yeah. I think it works so well because it's like a mini podcast.
Yeah.
So like you're getting the best of the best in like just a 10, 12 minute video.
That was my whole mission with it, is I wanted to call it like a fly podcast. I want to make it cool. I want to make it fun to watch, but also having so much game packed in those 15 to 20 minutes that it felt like you just watched a 2-hour show, but it was super entertaining to watch the whole entire time. Because I do love podcasts. I occasionally watch them from time to time. Like I like yours. There's a couple of theirs I watch, but I don't sit and watch them.
Yeah.
I'd listen to him.
Yeah.
So I wanted to create this new sort of genre. And it's going well. I really like it, and I want to keep going for a long time and keep getting better at them.
So if we go back to the business that was doing really well, did you end up selling that?
Yeah, I sold it last year in August.
Why did you want to sell it?
Because my YouTube channel was going crazy and it was something that I was really falling in love with at the time. I felt like I was making some of my best creative work of my career, and I wasn't feeling that same love for this business that I had back in 2020. So for me, it was sort of like...
Was it taking up a lot of time?
Yeah, it was. It became like almost like, how you say, like, I don't want to say a distraction, but something I didn't want to do anymore. Mm-hmm. I was making way more money from the YouTube channel and the education business. That store got me from here to here, but it wasn't going to get me to that next level. Mm-hmm. So I started working with a broker. We got a valuation for the business, and it took around 5 months until we got it sold, but we sold it in August of last year.
How much was that?
I can't say how much I sold it for because there was a NDA in the sale, but it wasn't tens of millions of dollars or anything like that, but it was enough for me to be comfortable and say, I'm going to focus on YouTube and growing this without feeling like I just threw the store away. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
So you didn't feel like after you got that money come in, you didn't want to go back to LA and just go on a mad run? Like,
no.
Before you learned your lesson?
No, but I bought a car.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bought my M2 competition. So nice, I went and bought that. And then, you know, I live in Miami already. I love Miami. I actually like Miami more than LA.
Do you know what? If I wasn't living here, I would probably be in Miami, I think, realistically. Anywhere in the world, I know I need to be by the beach. That's what makes me most happy.
Yeah, so Miami's great.
It was either going to be between LA and Miami, but I think LA, from what I've heard, has gone downhill quite a lot.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there. You know, I just remembered, right when I sold the store, I bought two things. I bought myself a car, but I also went and bought my sister a car as well, because she was actually such a big part in growing that business. She was in the first commercial that we ever did on Facebook. She also helped me with the customer service for the business. So I guess those were the two splurges that I did when I first sold the business. Yeah.
That's good, man. So you didn't waste it all. So that's, you learned from last time.
Yeah, I like material stuff. Like, I like nice clothes. I like the watches and stuff, but they don't do nothing for me. Like, after you buy a bunch of stuff, nothing really makes you feel anything anymore. The things that I value the most in terms of spending money is experiences, and also giving stuff to the people around me. Like, I always try to give out gifts to all my friends, and I'm sorry I didn't bring you a gift today, but man, like, this trip alone, I spent like thousands of dollars on gifts for people. Like, I bought Imana a vintage Rolex, like from 1960.
No way.
And
how did you find that?
You know, he's Imana. I had to find it. No, I got a guy, though, that was... I actually hit up everybody that I knew that sold watches. Mm-hmm. And I found all these people. Oh, buy this, bro. Buy this, bro. I was like, no. I need to find the best thing.
Yeah, because Imana's got a pretty decent selection. So you'd have to get something which stands out a little bit.
I think he liked it a lot. Yeah. He had a Patek on. He took off the Patek and he put that watch on. I was like, yes, it's good.
So what is Miami like these days?
Miami's great. I mean, for me, I don't live the Miami life. Like, I don't go partying a lot. I just stay at home and I work, but it's nice for me. Mm. If I want to get outside, I can. But for me, I stay at home. I ride my bike. I go kickbox. I go to the gym. Like, I don't really be outside like that like I used to be.
Like, does it have its similarities to Dubai, or is it very, very different?
There's some similarities for sure. Sometimes when I'm walking around here, I feel like I'm in Miami, but I wouldn't...
You just don't smell that marijuana in the air like you do in Miami.
Miami's a little bit... The reason why I like Miami is because it's a little bit more grungier. It feels a little bit more real than Dubai feels. Dubai's like a little too, like everything's too smooth around here. Like, it just doesn't feel... authentic in a way. Miami has got a little bit of edge on it that I like, you know?
That's why I like to travel every so often. Like, this, the break that I get in the summer is a nice... It's to the point where I leave it for like 2 or 3 months and then I'm like really looking forward to coming back. Mm-hmm. And then I appreciate being in Dubai. But then after a while, I'm like, I need to get out of Dubai.
This place grew on me. I could see why you guys live out here. When I first got here, I didn't like it. But now after being here for 2 weeks, I see it. I get it now. It's a nice place.
I was going to ask you as well. It's funny because the first video I actually saw of yours was the War Room review, which that's racked up quite a lot of views. But did you get any word back from Andrew or anyone?
No, I never followed up with them. For me, I felt like that was a good creative project that we did. I didn't feel like I trashed his business in a major way. I think he just did some damage control with his reaction to that video. But no, I never heard back from him. But we have so many mutual friends that if I really wanted to talk to that man, I can get in front of him. It wouldn't be that hard.
How did you end up meeting Luke?
Me and Luke met actually, Luke Belmar, and Luke met like 2 years ago. Luke's a great guy. He actually was in Miami and we had known each other on the internet for a while. And I was like, let's hang out. So we end up just doing nothing, no extravagant plans. He came over to my apartment that I had in Miami. And we just, at that time, like I have a much nicer house now, but I just had a little tiny apartment. And we just literally sat, he sat on the floor, I sat on the couch, and we just sat there and talked for like 2 hours. And I remember when I met Luke back in the day, he told me one of the first things he ever told me, he's like, brother, one day I'm going to become the most famous man on the planet. Luke at this time had 20,000 Instagram followers, no YouTube channel, no TikToks, nothing. And I was like, how? He's like, listen, brother, you'll see. Just sit back and watch. And like, I'm watching. He's doing it.
Yeah, he's getting
it. He's doing it, you know? So Luke is cool, man. He's somebody that I've always respected as a man, and he's taught me a lot in my life. He's like a brother to me. Mm. Yeah.
I didn't realize that was something he really wanted. He really wants to be that famous.
Maybe he would tell you something different now, but I will never forget that conversation I had with him that day, because he said that with such conviction that I actually believed him. If any of my other friends told me that, I would have, like, kind of laughed at them, like, all right, bro, all right. But Luke said it with like the most coldest, serious stare and tone ever. I was like, let's get it. Yeah, like,
When he does that, you're like, okay, I'm not going to doubt this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on the podcast, and that was a really good conversation.
Yeah, he's one of the best speakers I ever met in my life.
Yeah, and he's launched his Capsule Club, and that's apparently doing really well.
Yeah.
Do you do anything like that? Like, I don't know, masterminds or online coaching or anything?
Yeah, so I have a business called Viral Vault. It's an all-in-one toolkit to start your first Shopify store. So we have training, we have software, and we have a community built into there. And over the years, we've had tens of thousands of people join and start their first store from using our platform. So that's really my main business. That's what I run, and that's what I use my traffic from YouTube for, is to push to that. This is a business that I've had actually since 2018. So that's really my main business that I run nowadays.
Do you think it would have been as successful if you weren't such a big presence online on YouTube?
The majority of the traffic comes from my YouTube channel, so no.
But I guess if you didn't have that traffic, would you just run ads to grow it?
Yeah, I think the big reason why people join and purchase that business because they want to learn what worked for me. Mm-hmm. And inside of the community, we have a bunch of coaches. Inside the course, we have a bunch of other teachers. But people really want to learn what worked for me. So that business is a lot primarily fueled by my story and what worked for me, which I'm sort of trying to pivot out of a little bit now because it makes it hard for me to really scale it to that highest level. So we can start getting some affiliates in there, some other marketing methods. But it's worked, man. It's made good money this year. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like that's ticking along in the background. It's not taking up too much of your time.
No, I check in with my team every day. Mm-hmm. I have an amazing team. I have a CTO. I have somebody that runs the operations. I have support. I have coaches. It's like 16 people now. Mm-hmm. So for me, all I have to do is check in with them every day. And I do one weekly call with every single member inside of that community. So it doesn't take much of my time, but I'm thinking about it all the time. I'm always thinking about how to make the product better, but thankfully I have a great team. So,
Is there anything else you're working on or planning to launch in the future? Or are you just focusing on the YouTube for now?
Well, I came out here in Dubai to actually collaborate with Iman because I'm joining the team at Educate, his new project. So I created some training inside of his program. We're doing a deal together in which I'm involved in that project. And that makes me feel good because I like teaching dropshipping. And I really do believe it's one of the best business models for beginners. But it's good to have other options as well. And I like that the Educate platform is offering people a variety of different businesses to choose from with the world-class teachers in place. And I'm actually the first person that's coming in to collaborate on that project with him. So I'm really looking forward to that.
That's good. I was speaking to him about it. I think that's what the world needs at the moment. And that's the direction that I guess education is going in, because all these skills, which, you know, I've acquired, you've acquired, you're not getting them in school. You're not getting them in university. 100%. You're just learning from these professors and teachers who have learned the theory, but not actually put it into practice.
That's my big mission on my channel too, is like, I want to create the education that I wish existed when I was first starting my journey. When I was 15 years old and I was trying to make money online, when I would go to YouTube to try to find examples of people that were doing it, none of them looked like me. Mm. I didn't relate to any of those guys whatsoever. So my whole central focus of this channel is to give something that people can relate to so they actually feel like they could do it too. Because that's the first step. They got to feel like they could get out there and do it. Mm-hmm. You know?
If you had to go back to being 18,
yeah,
with everything that you know now, what would you do? But you don't have a following. Nobody knows who you are, but you just have all the skills which you've acquired over the past few years.
If I was 18 and I had no skills and I had no plan on how to make money, the first thing I would do is find somebody who I respect, whether that be Mike or Iman or Jordan, and see exactly what worked for them to get them to their first dollars. I wouldn't look at what they're doing today. I would look at what they did to get their first dollars. And I would study that blueprint as heavily as possible. You don't have to come up with something revolutionary to make money online. In fact, you could just follow in the footsteps of somebody else that already did it. The mistake that so many people make at 18 is that they try to follow you and follow me and follow everybody else. So their brain is constantly like, maybe I should be a fitness coach, or maybe I should do agency, or maybe I should do dropshipping. So you don't know what to do. I say you pick one path. I say you find somebody that you really respect inside of that path. You study their blueprint and you give yourself a time horizon of a year of working on that thing every single day until you start to see some results. If you do this and you actually put in the work, there's no way that you could fail. There's literally no way that you could fail. Mm. The mistake that people make is that they jump from thing to thing too quickly. And they don't give themselves a long enough time horizon to let that one thing work. It took me 10 years to hit 1 million subscribers on YouTube. It took me 6 months until I made my first $100,000 in profit with e-commerce. And then it also took me another 3 years after that to make my first real $1 million in sales. So, you know, it's a longer time horizon that people need to have when it comes to actually making money on the internet. Mm. You know what I mean?
And that's what I say. You just have to be yourself. You have to be authentic. If you're trying to be somebody else or try and copy someone else's style, people can see through that.
That's so real, bro. I think that's another thing. It's like the clones. I think it's not bad to clone somebody, but make sure they're the person that you really want to be. Mm. Because when you get there, you're going to be like, damn, well, who did I become? You know?
It's like when Tate blew up. You just saw all these wannabe Tates, like just spewing all that, the red pill stuff.
Aviators, cigars, multiple women, you know? That was never you, bro. You know, you copied that. So I think that's what I would say if I was 18. Yeah.
How's the relationship situation with you?
I know I'm married.
So yeah, that's no. Does anybody know that?
It's not such a public thing, but yes, I've been with my woman now for almost 3 years, and yeah, I.
How did you decide she's the one?
Is it really like a decision thing?
Bro, it's a difficult one. I guess people say you just know. Very quickly, guys, I just want to ask you a quick question. Are you taking supplements? And if you are, do you have any idea if you're taking the right supplements in the right amounts? You see, the more that I discovered about the importance of micronutrient supplementation and the adverse health effects of micronutrient deficiencies, I would constantly ask myself the same thing. I would go into supplement stores, load up on bottles of micronutrients and pop pills daily without really knowing if they were doing me any good or not. That's when I decided to try out Bionic. Since 2021, I've been getting my blood work done with them every 3 to 4 months. And once the blood test has been analyzed, they would put together a customized micronutrient formula tailored specifically for me. And this would last me for 3 to 4 months until I got my blood work done again. And since then, I've honestly never looked back. If you are also serious about performing at your best, preventing development of diseases and maximizing your overall health and well-being, I highly recommend you give it a try. And they've recently introduced Bionic Go, which is a fraction of the price, where all you need to do is just fill in a questionnaire online without the need of a blood test. If you want to find out more or give them a try, head over to bionic.com, but you can use my exclusive referral code BQMikeThurston for a discount on your first order. Let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, I think when we first started to hang out in the beginning, I felt good about it. And I knew that there was something there. Obviously, it wasn't like they make it out in the movies like, oh, right when I met her, I knew she was the one. Mm. It wasn't really like that. But when we started spending more and more time together, I started realizing that, hey, this is something that I want to continue. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I might have dated somebody in the past and then you spend that time with them. And when they leave, you're like, okay, whew, thank God they're out of here. Mm. But her, I wanted to keep seeing her over and over and over again. And that was the first time that I have felt that way in a long time. So, yeah.
Do you know what? In a way, it's like such a good thing because there's no distraction. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be wasting your time going on dates, getting distracted by women, especially in places like Miami. Like mm-hmm. that can really take you away from your path and your purpose. And if you found someone who is going to be supportive, she's going to be there for you, mm-hmm. and she's along for the ride, then you know it's only going to push you to new heights.
Yeah, I think being a single man with money, you are riddled with the maximum level of temptations more than anybody else.
I know, yeah.
But the challenge and the men that truly become successful are the ones that can resist those temptations, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're every single weekend seeking somebody new, if you're constantly dealing with the drama of somebody getting mad that they found out you was with somebody else, that shit takes away from your purpose and what you're trying to do. Now, a relationship and a marriage also has its own cons, but in the end, you're building something. Mm-hmm. So for me, I saw that as the path that I wanted to go on. And I say that all the men that I won't say all, but the majority of the men that I look up to in my life have one woman or they're married and they're actually with that person and committed to that person. Mm-hmm. So that was the path that I chose and feels good.
Yeah, I'm actively trying to find more of those men who are happily married and have a family because that's ultimately what I want one day. And I don't want to be in the position where there is, because there's so many guys that have got divorced mm-hmm. and then they have like maybe a messy breakup and then the kids get, you know, negatively affected by that. And that's not something I want.
It's scary. It's something that scares everybody that's in a relationship or a marriage is the idea that one day this thing might not work. Mm. But would you not want to live because you knew you might die one day?
Yeah. Do you want to have kids one day?
Yeah, definitely. I think some of the saddest men that I've ever met in my life are men that are in their 50s that don't have children. Because it's like you reach a certain point where then it's like it was kind of, you missed the boat. Like if you do it now, the kids is kind of like not going to really get to connect with you like that. And you're going to have to just find somebody last minute. It's like, it's best, I think, to do it. It's a scary thing, though. At 25 years old, it's not something that I'm ready to do right now, but it's something I definitely want to do one day. Mm. I think that's how you continue your legacy. And perhaps it's a bit selfish, but I think it's a way to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
What are you currently doing to stay on top of your health and optimize your performance when it comes to your business?
For me, health is a big thing. I try to really optimize in all aspects. Like, I get blood tests regularly. I got a genetic exam recently, which was pretty interesting, actually. And
anything surprising?
Yeah, I mean, I can't kick you all the science behind it. I got like this guy that I work with named Gary Brecka at 10X Health, and his team, like, they do the genetic test and they give you an analysis of it, and then they give you supplements to sort of fill those deficiencies. And when I saw a genetic test, I saw so many things that I didn't even realize that were, it started to make sense. Like, there were certain things in there talking about how, like, anxiety was like a genetic thing that both of your parents have. So now it's baked into your genetic coding. But if you take this supplement, it will help take it away. I would wake up feeling a little bit more tired every single day. And I thought that was just a relatively normal thing. But then I started taking the supplements and getting rid of certain foods in my diet, and it started to get better. So what I say when I started making money was I started investing into these things, like blood tests, genetic exam, supplementation, and also the food. At my house, I'm really weird about it. Like, I don't eat no processed food at all. I really make sure to get everything organic. I eat all whole foods as much as I can.
I think it's more difficult in America to try and dodge that stuff. Like, the average food in the supermarkets is like, it's really not that good for you.
It's hard to dodge it for sure. But if you're like, it's not hard to get it.
Yeah.
It's hard to dodge it because it's being thrown at you everywhere, but it's definitely not hard to get it. Like, you can find a local supermarket, or you can go to your farmer's market, or you could literally go to the grocery store. You just got to pick the right things.
You're still vegan?
Yeah, I am.
Really?
Since 2017.
Nice.
Yeah, bro. I know you're on the carnivore vibes, huh?
I just eat everything, really. Yeah. I stay away from dairy, but I tolerate pretty much everything, but I stay away from anything that's heavily processed.
Yeah, I don't have any issues with meat, actually. Like, I think it's something that even later on in my life I could go back to. But at this stage of eating a plant-based diet now for 7 years, when I run my labs and I come back consistently healthy, when I'm in the gym and I'm putting up weights that I'm happy with, and I'm in a cardio state that I'm really happy with. Like, we played soccer the other day, right? And I'm playing soccer with my friends that are carnivores, and they're all these like big meat eaters and stuff like that. I don't get tired, bro. I'm out here outrunning these guys left, right, and center. So it's working for me. Therefore, I'll keep doing it. I could see the arguments for the whole, you know, carnivore, eating more meat and stuff, but what I'm doing now is working for me.
Did you ever get tested before you went vegan, of all the testing and everything you've done?
I actually didn't, because back at that time, I was not even making any money. That was in 2017. So that would be interesting to see what it was then to what it was now.
Yeah, I think for anybody who starts making decent money, to reinvest that into yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Improve the quality of the food that you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe get involved with some gadgets that are going to assist with, like, say, for example, Whoop. Like, that helped me massively, just to understand more about my sleeping habits and to improve it. And actually made me realize, oh, okay, so it doesn't even matter. Like, I could sleep for 7 hours, but what's the quality of the sleep like? Mm-hmm. How much deep sleep did you get? How much REM sleep did you get? Like, all these things made a massive difference. And that was one of the major things that made me move away from alcohol. Because if I did go out and drink, I'd only need to drink more than 3 drinks, and I would wake up the next day, my HRV would be down massively, my recovery would be down massively, respiratory rate would be high, resting heart rate high, like, and that's all just from alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, shit, like, I had no idea it was like doing that much damage.
The sleep tracking, it helps a lot. I don't do it. I need to do it.
But do you have problems sleeping though?
Not really. I fall asleep like quickly, and I wake up pretty consistently at the same time. I feel like it's good to know if you're doing good or bad, but also, like, you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel about health in general. Like, people overcomplicate it, and you could maybe agree or disagree, but like, everybody's trying to get on some diet and some health routine and master the sleep optimization, but it really comes down to just exercise, good sleep, and eating no processed food, organic food, and drinking a bunch of water. Like, if you can nail those 4 things, you're gonna be healthier than 99% of people in the world.
And do it, like, consistently.
Yes.
That's the big thing.
Yes. But I gotta get bigger like you, bro. So you got some stuff you gotta teach me. Maybe the vegan diet won't get me there. I don't know.
I think it will. I tried it for 1 week.
Uh-huh.
And it was fine.
Yeah.
I think the most difficult thing was I was trying to hit the protein target, but also not go overboard with the carbs and the fats.
Yeah.
And it's quite difficult to find protein sources that are just like, just high in protein, low in fat, low in carbs, like a chicken breast. Like, there isn't many natural alternatives to that.
the only way.
They have all the fake meat and the processed vegan stuff. That's not good for you.
I try to avoid that stuff at all costs. Yeah. I think when people hear that I'm vegan, like that's what they think that like I'm eating every single day is like Beyond Burgers and shit like that. But it's really not like that. At home, what I eat on most days is primarily organic vegetables and grains. And we have multiple protein sources that I eat, like tofu, seitan, tempeh, and protein powder smoothies that I make almost on a daily basis. But I hate Beyond Burgers and Impossible Burgers. And that's like some of the worst food I think you could possibly put in your body. Yeah.
I think what opened my eyes to it was when I went to Bali.
Yeah.
Because there they have like some amazing vegan options.
Mm-hmm.
And I would try a couple of them and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe how tasty it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to make life easier as a vegan, you either need to be really good at prepping vegan meals and like using lots of different ingredients or get a chef.
Yeah. I watched this documentary on Netflix about the blue zones and like the places that have the longest lifespans. And there was a consistent trend amongst them that most of them like ate a little less than what most people do. Like they would only fill themselves to be like 70% full, 80% full. And most of them didn't eat meat as their primary source of food.
Mm-hmm.
They always did it as like the side piece of it. You know, whereas like, you know, some people, it's the only thing that they eat. They don't eat nothing else. So, you know, it's just different strokes for different folks.
What are you doing for like the activity, exercise?
I like to lift, but more than that, I like to do cardio. I mean, calisthenics, cardio, kickboxing. At home, I got a pull-up bar, I got dips. I do weighted calisthenics. I've been kickboxing a lot. I go every day now. I'm not like the heaviest lifter, but I like to do like more of like a hybrid thing. So I do the calisthenics, a little bit of weightlifting, kickboxing. I like to run, I like to ride my bike. I don't care to like squat, you know, four places stuff, but I want to be able to use my body in the best way. I stretch a lot. Try to be like a, how do you say, like a practical athlete. Like I want to be mobile.
Oh, yeah, functional, yeah.
I want to be functional. I want to be mobile. I want to be able to use my body. I want to be flexible. I want to feel good in my body. Mm. I would like to get my weight up though in lifting wise.
Yeah, you wouldn't even need to do anything too crazy. You probably just need to add another weight session in there, follow a structured training program.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if your goal is to gain weight, you'd have to be careful with how much cardio you're doing because the more cardio, the kickboxing you're doing, you're just burning more calories, which means then if you are doing that, then you're going to have to eat more. And if you're not a fan of eating lots of food, then you need to figure out ways to just burn less food. That's the problem I had when I was a coach. And there's all these people who would struggle to gain weight. But then they'd be going to the gym like five times a week, but then they'd be doing like the boxing training five times a week as well. And I'm like, well, maybe just do less cardio and your life is going to be easy. Otherwise, you're going to have to be eating over 4,000 calories a day.
Yeah, that's been the challenge for me is because I'm always doing active stuff. I play basketball all the time, kickboxing all the time. I ride my bike every day. So it's like I have to eat like double what I want to eat if I want to gain weight.
Mm.
But I feel good, bro. I honestly do. Like maybe I want to get a little bit bigger, but I don't desire to be like massive. You know, I don't look at myself in the mirror and wish that I looked different, you know?
Whereabouts have you been around the world that you'd recommend for other people to go to? Are you well traveled?
I've been around.
Yeah.
I went to Argentina a couple times this year. That's where my wife is from. And I actually really like Argentina, especially for people that's making money on the internet. Because if you're making dollars and you go and spend some time there, your dollar is so strong, bro. Like you can go to a 5-star dinner, get the best food, the best carne asada, best drinks, best dessert. And it's only going to cost you like $10, $15 a person, bro, for the best food in the world. They also have some of the best nature and natural resources, and the quality of the food there is better than almost any other place I've been. So Argentina, two thumbs up.
The meat is very good, but you obviously wouldn't get involved with that.
Didn't have it, but everybody tells me, so it must be good, right?
Yeah.
Argentina for sure. I also went to Spain this year, and we spent some time over there, Madrid, Ibiza.
Did you go to Ibiza?
Yeah.
Nice. Did you manage to play anything at all?
I'm not that lit yet, bro. They don't let me on a stage over there yet. But maybe next year, that would be really a dream for me to go play something over there. Even if it's a small party that I host myself, that would be awesome. I think all
you need to do, if you just become famous enough, you can do anything. They just let you, like, as long as they can use your name and be like, hey, so-and-so is playing here tonight, then maybe they'll go ahead and let you do it.
It's true. My friend Yomi Denzel here in Dubai, he actually started DJing as well. And he's like, yeah, bro, I just did a set at this club here. And because I posted on my story and all these people showed up, they said I can come back anytime. I was like, so my light bulb moment. Ching. No. But yeah, for me, I like Ibiza. I like Argentina. Dubai is cool. I don't see myself coming back here like for like vacation, but for work, it's been one of my favorite places to work. Mm-hmm. And I also really like Costa Rica. Costa Rica is a beautiful place.
Well, you know what you could do? I guess now you can travel to these places and interview the successful people and the millionaires in these places. Like people, like you could go to Japan maybe.
Yeah.
And interview some of the Japanese millionaires.
Every trip that I've taken, I actually did a video. I went to Switzerland this year with Luke. I did a video there. Here in Dubai, I sat with a billionaire last week and spent the whole day with him. I actually try to double dip on these trips. Like I have fun, but I also make videos there. So that's actually honestly my favorite part about my job is that I get paid to do these trips. Like, bro, even this Dubai trip, I give a shout out to Iman and the Educate team because not only did they fly me, my videographer and my wife out here, they got us one of the biggest villas on the Palm. It's massive.
I was like, who's staying there?
9-bedroom house for three of us. I mean, we've had a Rolls Royce driver every single day. I sat with billionaires. Like, and all this is like off of the strength of the brand that I've built on the internet, you know? So stuff like that, I get super grateful for. And it's not the first time that's happened. Like when we travel, like people take care of us. And that's something that really makes me feel good, you know?
Yeah. You know what's crazy about the videos that you make? Because they're all about money or finance related. The AdSense is so high compared to just like normal videos and vlogs.
Yeah.
Like I was, because Iman is very public about like posting like the stats and analytics of his YouTube.
Me too.
And I figured it out. Like I was breaking it down from like the views he gets versus the views I get. And for every dollar that I would earn, he gets at least $3.
Yeah, we did an AdSense comparison the other day because I was just curious on what he's earning. It's the business videos on YouTube make the most money.
What the hell am I doing? I just stopped making these videos about building muscles, man.
Well, I mean, that CPM is good too compared to like entertainment or like kids videos. But yeah, like last month alone, we made over $60,000 in AdSense off of just a couple million views.
That's so good.
Yeah.
What you do? What do you have an approach with the revenue that you get from YouTube? Like, do you allocate that? Do you reinvest it into making more videos?
I mean, we use the money, all right? Like I pay my head of content. He gets a good salary. My wife is also on the team, so she gets paid. And we have a bunch of people that help us, editors, thumbnail guys. I have a strategist. So I pay my team first. And then the rest of the money, we use it for more videos. Whether we have to travel to shoot a video or whether we need to buy something to get the video together, we need more gear. But I really try to not use that money for myself. Like I take a salary from my YouTube channel like this. I keep all that money inside of that account so we can make better videos. That's been my thing since the beginning. I have my business. My business pays me well, but the YouTube money, we try to keep it there and use it to grow the channel. And it's been working.
So moving forward, you're going to focus, that's the main focus is going to be the YouTube. You can continue to grow the business. Anything else?
Those are the things that I'm most interested in. Building my channel, making the best art that I can possibly create, becoming a better man in the process and documenting that journey, building my business, this Educate project now, just added to that. So that feels really good. And, you know, I have some other desires for other companies that I want to build down the line. But for me, with these two things, as long as I can keep growing there, you know, I'm pleased. I think I have a desire to build a company that is sort of outside of the e-commerce and dropshipping world, potentially in the world of helping creators, because that is a lane that I think calls to me heavily right now at this point in my life. When people reach out to me, they still speak about dropshipping, but a lot of people want to learn more about YouTube from me, or a lot of people want to learn about how to blow up. So that's sort of a lane that I think I could step into. I don't see many good creator academies out there in the world. And I think that that's a lane that has yet to be filled. So maybe there's something there coming next year.
I think, it sounds like you're on the right track. Like just focus on the things that are working and try not to get too distracted by trying to do too many different things. I've done that before. And then I realized I'm trying to juggle all these different things. And then the things that were working for me end up not being as good as they were before because I'm putting less time and attention into it.
That was what made me go broke the first time. I had a business that was making money, and instead of sticking with that business, I started looking for the next one. There is a silver line to that, and is that like you can always reinvent yourself and there's always another chapter in your life. So for me, that was it. That was what happened in mine. It sort of worked, and then I failed, and then I reinvented. But now I found what's working. I'm just doubling down on that. But I really like the creator lane, and I'm working on something there. Yeah.
How old are you now?
I'm 25.
25?
Yeah.
So, goddamn, smashing it.
I'm trying, bro. You know, these days, the millionaires are getting younger and younger. So even at 25, I'm starting to feel like I'm reaching a unk status, you know? They're going to start calling
me. Mate, it's so mad. If I think back to the way things were like 10 years ago, like when I was 23, 24, 25, I'm sure there was far less younger people being that successful. I think it's a great time now to make money, for sure. It's like there's almost no excuse not to.
There's no excuse unless you don't want to do it. But if you really want to do it, there's so many different ways to do it. And all the information is now accessible to everybody. Mm-hmm. If you want to make money online in this era, there's no excuse not to get it. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah, man. Good stuff. Well, I'll leave it at that because I know you have a flight to catch. Definitely. So where can people find you?
Well, just check me out on YouTube, man. Jordan Welch. Trying to post a couple videos every single month, sharing my story, sharing the stories of other entrepreneurs around the world. And brother, thank you for having me on this channel, man. I watched a bunch of the shows. You had some of my best friends on here and you smashed it. So thank you.
Nice, man. Thank you very
much. Appreciate you, bro.
Wicked.